all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Monday, August 7th, National, Purple Heart Day. Yes, of course, National Lighthouse Day, National Raspberries and Cream Day. So if we can modify that slightly to National Raspberries and Cream Cheese Day, so I can get a raspberry cream cheese pie from Main Street Bakery up in Bloomer, then I'm in. I'll do it. Kristen Lyerly is sticking around for a little bit with us as well. Also a fan of raspberries and cream, I assume.
Of course. And pie.
And pie overall. And then tomorrow you won't be here. So do we need to celebrate ahead of time that tomorrow's International Cat Day? Because here's how we're going to celebrate it. We don't care. Because that's what the cats would do. The cats wouldn't care. So we're not going to care that tomorrow's International Cat Day.
We'll acknowledge it and then put our noses up in the air and be like, fine.
Yeah, fine. Tomorrow's also Sneak Some Zucchini Onto Your Neighbor's Porch Day, which I remember a year ago getting into it with you and Mathers about, you know, whether zucchini has any value or not. And there you guys are. And now Aaron goes and pipes in and says, yeah, there's a zucchini in his fridge that he would actually willingly eat for some reason.
Yeah, I'd cook it up. I know I've done that sometimes at my parents' house. And a nice baked or fried zucchini with your chicken dinner, like chicken, rice, zucchini, that's pretty good, I think.
Back over here is a kind of a cardboard coaster. And I'm going to substitute one of those for the zucchini. I'm going to see if you can taste the difference. put it in there.
No, you don't like do the big woody zucchinis. Like those are, you know, that's compost. Okay. You have to do the young tender zucchini.
Okay. Consider me schooled.
That's what they called me in high school.
Young tender zucchini. That's a great name for a band.
God, I hope somebody takes that and we get credit someday. Coming up this hour, Wisconsin Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski and our friends from Motherhood for Good will be here to review how Sarah's group Women Win Wisconsin played a vital role in April's state Supreme Court election and how moms can continue to grow their level of civic engagement so that our state doesn't backslide from its recent gains. So we'll talk to Sarah Godlewski, Nicole Slavin, and Aaron Phillips. All on the way, but Kristen, you're a mom, and so you're qualified to talk about this as well.
Ooh,
about the importance of just staying plugged in, staying engaged, and not just saying, well, there's not another election now for, you know, a year, so I don't have to think about it. Yeah, you do.
Oh yeah, now's the time to start thinking about it so mm-hmm. that you can start planning and connecting with people and talking about some of the things that are important to you. Because ultimately, an election isn't just about picking a name on the ballot. It's about deciding what you want for the future for you and especially for your kids.
Yeah. I was talking with some friends yesterday, and they were, one of them was saying that she needed some cheering up. She said, because she was already getting depressed about the 2024 election. And I said, no. That's depressed is not the way to go on this, because I said, look, I think about the 2024 election all the time too. The reason I don't get depressed or anxious about it is it's still so early. In how many past cycles did people already say Howard Dean was going to be the nominee, mm-hmm. you know, or Rudy Giuliani was, you know, guaranteed to be the nominee, or Chris Christie or whatever. It's so far off yet that it's not that you can't get that deeply invested into what the race is going to be yet. I mean, honestly, and I don't mean to throw a grenade into the room, we don't even know that Joe Biden and Donald Trump are going to be the nominees yet. Either one of them could have some kind of a health scare or, you know, whatever, you know, in Trump's case, a legal problem. We don't know. So we should care about the issues. We should care about what they say. And the last thing I said about it is, when it comes to who the Republican candidates are, really the only thing to pay attention to right now is not where they are on all these culture war issues that they like to bring up, or, you know, the budget or what have you. The only thing that really matters for those candidates right now is, are they sycophants for Trump, Or are they showing some separation? Are they showing that they're willing to call him out? And not in a mealy-mouthed way, but like in a full-throated way, like the way Chris Christie's doing now, the way that Mike Pence ever so slowly, but he's getting there faster than some of the other candidates. That's the thing you got to watch out for. Because if we're going to tell moms to stay engaged and want to vote and everything, then they need to know that one of the candidates is either also going to be for democracy or is going to stand with Trump and say, you know, I'm willing to overturn an election and call it just a technical legal matter, you know?
You're so right. And while all of that is playing out on that level, let's remember that closer to home, in our cities, in our counties, in our states, are really the fundamental elections that affect us every single day. In the spring, we've got the nonpartisan elections coming up. Those are the school boards and the mayors and the county boards. Those are the things that you really want to make sure you know who you're voting for. And those are often the people who you don't know who you're voting for because there's so much less information there. So if you're interested in digging around and finding out more about these people, or heck, maybe you even want to run, maybe you want to be part of the future of your community, that's an option for you.
You
it
know what?
Truly we, is.
We need to get the folks from Emerge on the show and maybe Run for Something. A Run for Something is the name of a group as well, mm-hmm. to get people to run and get people thinking about it now, because that's, again, you know, you're the solution we've all been waiting for, you know, mm-hmm. so let's all do that for ourselves. Hey, great to talk to you. Have a wonderful start to the week.
Thanks. Right back at you, brother.
Have fun in Chicago. No hometown health this week. You say hi to the boss for us.
I will.
And we'll do this again next Monday morning.
Can't wait.
All right. Talk to you later. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Our weatherology forecast is coming up along with a Brewers update and more next. You're up north. Poor Ken. As done by Ryan Gosling. The Barbie movie topped the $1 billion mark in sales. Heck of a way for director and co-writer Greta Gerwig to celebrate her 40th birthday. So good on her. I'd play stuff from, you know, Oppenheimer that I saw over the weekend, but that's not nearly as upbeat as the Barbie song and anything that Ken could bring us here. Time for our weatherology forecast now, and meteorologist Jennifer Wachitski is here to tell us what we're going to expect. Jen, it was watching that system move through. We here in the Chippewa Valley stayed right on the edge of it. So we're watching this thing spinning all day long, but it never quite got here. It's since moved out of the way. And so what's the precipitation looking like for the start of the week here across Wisconsin and temperatures as well? Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, well, it does look like partial sunshine for the southern half of the state today. Not expecting to see any rainfall coming in from that, but that cloudiness from that particular system is going to be here today. Sunny skies for central Wisconsin, then a slight chance for an isolated rain shower late this afternoon in the late afternoon hours around Baldwin, and that's about the extent of that. Highs today getting up into the upper 70s to low 80s, either at or just slightly below average for this time of the year. Sunny skies across the board for Tuesday with highs in the mid to low 80s, more of an average day. Nothing too thrilling tomorrow, but a pretty decent day. Wednesday looks like at least a slight chance for showers and storms developing in the afternoon hours for everyone, with highs once again in the mid to low 80s. Thursday, sunshine for all, highs again in the mid to low 80s, but then a chance for showers and storms coming in for Thursday night ahead of a cold front, a higher chance around Amory and Baldwin. Then by Friday, that cold front starts to come in, slightly cooler, mid to upper 70s from Oshkosh to Wausau and over to west central Wisconsin, with a chance for showers and storms for the day. Chance for those showers and storms for southern Wisconsin as well, but that cold front won't have pushed through yet, so highs will linger in the mid to low 80s before cooling down just a little bit for the weekend ahead.
All right, Jennifer, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
There's Jennifer Wachitski from Weatherology joining us for this Monday morning. Brewer starting pitcher Brandon Woodruff made his return Sunday after 4 months on the injured list and did fairly well. He retired the first six Pittsburgh hitters, striking out the first five. He says he was still nervous just the same, being off for that long from the major league roster, and he gave up a couple of home runs. And with no run support from his teammates, that was the difference, and the Pirates got away with a 4-1 victory. Brewers are still in first place in the NL Central, a game and a half ahead of the Reds and the Cubs. Woodruff went for five innings, struck out 9 total with no walks, giving up just the 2 runs on 4 hits. The Rockies come to town for a 3-game series tonight, tomorrow night, and Wednesday afternoon. Before the Brewers begin a long road trip, Freddie Peralta will be on the mound tonight for the Brewers. You might have heard me say this before, but the Brewers can be heard in the Fox Valley on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM, 1100 AM, and WRCE News from the Center in Richland Center, 107.7 FM, and 1450 AM. And why do I give the radio station numbers? Because we've gotten a note once or twice over time going, why am I not hearing the Brewers over the Civic Media app? Well, because it doesn't work that way. Major League Baseball rules are very strict, and so you have permission to either broadcast a game versus, you know, stream a game or do something else with the game, and so you can hear the games on those radio stations, but on the app you'll hear streaming of regular programming. That said, you should get the app. It's a great app. You can find it over at civicmedia.us, and from there, you can make any one of the Civic Media radio stations your home station so that when you call up the app, you just have to hit the play button, and you're taking your favorite local radio station on the road with you. You can listen back to shows. You can also subscribe to our shows as podcasts. Go to civicmedia.us or Apple or Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, and just look for example, Up North News Radio. Subscribe to it, and you'll get each hour of programming, in this case, our 6 a.m. hour and our 7 a.m. hour, as 2 separate episodes, and that way you can listen to it at your leisure and take us along and not lose out on any of the goings-on as we talk about, you know, what's happening in the news in Wisconsin and around the country. For example, around the country, it's a little interesting to note that Donald Trump is still a free man this morning after he spent the weekend on social media doing the very things that he told the judge he would not do last week during his arraignment on charges of trying to overturn the 2020 election. And that would be making threatening remarks about the judge and about the prosecutor and saying other things that could potentially taint a jury pool. But again, there appear to be 2 sets of rules, you know, one for Trump and one for everybody else, so that while he was, out on social media, he could continue to, you know, insult his former vice president, continue to make false claims about an election that he says was stolen, but that he knows was not. Meanwhile, his lawyer was making the case to the judge that there should be a delay in the case, because that's what he's going to do all the time, is push for delays. And yet that same lawyer, John Laurel, found time to appear on CNN and Fox and ABC and NBC and CBS. So a lot of time to do talk shows. But he was trying to push back against the notion that Trump was pressuring Vice President Mike Pence to overturn the election. And the way that Laurel said this was, I guess, funny in a very sad way. What President Trump didn't do, Laurel said, what President Trump didn't do is direct Vice President Pence to do anything. He asked him in an aspirational way. He asked him in an aspirational way. You understand what that is, because anybody who has seen any kind of a mobster movie knows that that's what the people at the top do. They don't say, rob the bank. They say, that's a nice bank. It would be a shame if something happened to it. And then go on to say, well, I never said the magic words. And yet, that's what John Laurel was just straight up saying, that that's exactly what Trump did. In another case, he pushed back and said that Trump didn't order Pence to break the law. Laurel said something to the effect of, you know, that it was a technical violation of the Constitution. That's not the same as breaking a criminal law. Any violation of the Constitution is a violation of the law. They're one and the same. It's literally where we get our laws. They come by way of the Constitution. But so John Laurel didn't do his boss a lot of favors But then again, Trump didn't do himself favors either by referring to special counsel Jack Smith as deranged and referring to former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi as sick and demented. And of course, he had the one at the start of the weekend that said something to the effect of, if you come after me, I'm coming after you. Now imagine any other defendant putting that up on social media, that kind of threat of payback, and getting away with it. So there were folks already speculating this morning that whether Trump was going to be hauled back into court, maybe even threatened with jail time. And I'm going to take the slightly contrarian view, and I'm going to do so in a way that invokes a past case here. And that, of course, would be the case of the Waukesha County judge who presided over the Christmas parade case. And, again, in doing so, Jennifer Doro later became a state Supreme Court candidate. And while I did not think that, she would have necessarily been a good choice for state Supreme Court, as I said at the time, that takes nothing away from how she handled the case of the Waukesha Christmas parade killer, who represented himself and was an outlandish defendant, all the time interrupting and making wild accusations. And to Judge Doro's great credit, she did not take the bait. She calmly and meticulously went through the case, went through the trial, let the defendant, speak and lash out from time to time. But in doing so, in moving the trial along, it made the case that should he choose to appeal, that he was treated fairly, that the judge did not allow things to become a circus. He was still making outbursts, but she wasn't shouting back at him with bailiffs hauling him away to jail all the time. And I guess in that same vein, that's maybe what we have to expect from the Trump trial. It is absolutely understandable if the judge in this case, or in any case, were to say, based on some social media post or some idiotic thing that he says in a campaign rally, that he had gone too far and that, he was going to have his bond revoked and have to be remanded to custody so that he could no longer cause problems. I can understand that a judge might do that at some point, but I think that you have to almost pick your battles carefully, which I know sounds like we're elevating Trump to a different level. But again, much like the Waukesha trial, you need to be able to make the case that you, by and large, stuck to the facts of the case, despite the outbursts. So it's going to be one thing if he calls, Jack Smith deranged, and if he talks about little Mike Pence and all these other stupid things that he's going to do. The line, in my view, will be if he were to try to do something that would lead to, say, making public information that his attorneys are going to get as part of the discovery process, and then want to try to put that out on social media. And that is the motion that's actually going to be discussed today in court. It won't be discussed today, but motions are due today as far as making sure that, Trump is not allowed to disseminate some of the sensitive information that he's going to receive, that his attorney is going to receive as part of the discovery process. I understand we're walking a tightrope on that. That, if you don't crack down on Trump right away, you run the risk that he's going to, say something that might even jeopardize the impartiality of the case. But I'm going to say again that I think that much like the Waukesha trial, we're going to try to be judicious in how you handle basically the outbursts of a petulant child. Dick from Madison is calling in. Dick, do you have a comment on today's topic?
Well, I would normally agree with you, except there's this difference between Trump and the Christmas situation, which is this. This guy's got a lot of crazy followers who he might just incite to do something totally personally think they need to put a gag order on him and make it stick.
Because Dick, thank you.
There are some unhinged people.
You're absolutely right. It is an extremely well taken point. And I'm not even pushing back when I say this part, that the folks that are already unhinged and following him are out there right now, and anything might provoke them, which is not to say that I'm right. It's not to say that you're wrong. I think these are the kinds of things, the back and forth you and I are having right there, that a good judge is going to have to take seriously. And I hope that she does and does the right thing. Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski and Motherhood for Good next. You're up north. All right, it's time for another Motherhood Monday, something we couldn't do last week with our friends from Motherhood for Good, because it takes a host with a voice to actually host a radio show. So they were kind enough to hang around and put things off for a week. So we're going to join up with Aaron Phillips and Nicole Slavin in just a moment with their special guest, Secretary of State for the state of Wisconsin, Sarah Godlewski. So we've got so much to talk about yet before Terry Bell joins us with three things to know to start the week, all before we wrap things up for a Monday to get the week going. But right now, let's get to the Secretary and Aaron and Nicole. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning.
So nice to see you all here. Madam Secretary, how are things in the role here? You're back serving the public after a bit of a hiatus. What do we think of the new gig so far?
I will tell you, Pat, it's been exciting. And as I always like to say, I'd rather be busy than bored. And so I am far from bored in my new position. In fact, I recently got back from the Secretaries of State Conference in Washington, D.C. And we had not been there for over a decade. And so everybody was excited and giving Wisconsin a round of applause. So it was really nice to be there with my colleagues and learn all the great things that we can be doing with this office.
Well, especially since, the Secretary of State's office, you know, the duties vary by state, and in Wisconsin, those duties have been rather minimized, shall we say. So I'm guessing you got some good food for thought for things that you would like to do over the next, you know, 3+ years.
Yeah, I mean, it's everything from we are clearly behind when it comes to modernizing the way some of our just basic services to serve the people of Wisconsin. So folks from like Superior have to drive to my office to get whether it's different documents authenticated, to the Secretary of State's office has a unique connection often with the State Department. And they work on international opportunities, whether it is for cultural exchanges or for businesses and industry. And so I think there's just a lot of really helpful and different things that we can be thinking about.
Look at you trying to turn this into an office that is all about public service and civic engagement and gets us right into the wheelhouse here for Nicole and Aaron and Motherhood for Good. And Nicole and Aaron. Aaron, I'll start with you in setting up this week's segment. It was in part to highlight all of the work that moms and women have done. Not just because they care, but because they want to do exactly that. They want to serve people. They want to serve their community. And you can only do that if you're getting involved. And that's really a big focus of what you want to talk about this week, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, part of the original focus with this and in bringing Sarah on was to talk about, you know, this incredible moment that we're in our state where now we're less than a week into having a new progressive majority on the Supreme Court. And we're already seeing, you know, like very exciting things develop, cases about maps being filed in the courts. And we thought, who else to bring on but our good friend Sarah, who I actually met in person, actually for the first time at the little like reception. I say little, it was big.
The investiture
ceremony. Mm-hmm. So that was really exciting. It's just a very exciting moment to, if someone isn't tapped in, to tap in, because it's hard to not feel like some really exciting, important things are about to be happening.
Yeah, Nicole did the same for you. And we talked about this a bit last week, but I don't think you can say enough that last week's swearing in for the justice really was a celebration, if you will, of people. Don't just think about it in terms of politics or ideology, but simply involvement that so many people, you know, got off the bench and into the game, much like you and the other Motherhood for Good people.
Absolutely. And I will say, you know, it's tireless work, and you can be involved in politics at different levels. And you don't even have to consider it being involved in politics. It's just being involved in the things that matter to you and affect your life. And that's one of the core things we believe at Motherhood for Good, right? Is that parenting is inherently political and you can opt out of actually doing it, but it's still happening to you, right? So yes, to that point of the tireless work we've done and you know, me being in the Green Bay area and that blue wave from Door County on down through the Fox Valley and into Oshkosh, seeing the most recent election really, really, really drove home how important it is just showing up and that people care. And this is what Wisconsin wants.
Sarah, when I was talking with Kristen Lyerly in the last hour about this, we kind of stumbled upon a point that I'm hoping you can expand upon. And that is the way that, you know, judicial elections now have become rather political and almost partisan, and that, you know, you're not putting that toothpaste back in the tube. This is the world that we live in now. But that what you're looking for isn't the most political candidate for a role, whether it's justice or judge or even secretary of state for that matter, but the person who's going to serve and serve with integrity. And we made the point that for Janet Protasiewicz, she put her values out there and said, this is not how I'm going to rule on cases, but these are my values. Much like there are many things I disagree with Justice Brian Hagedorn, but he's also proven that, you know, despite whatever he says his values are, he's going to rule on the merits of a particular case. Secretaries of state have to do that as well. And look, we're not going backwards in terms of non-partisanship or pretending political values don't exist. So let's combine values with who's going to do the job in the most credible, honorable way.
Yeah. And I think in addition to values that Wisconsinites are looking at for their elected officials, whether that's serving for running for judge or for running for state treasurer. But I think the other big thing that this election also proved is that people want accountability. And I think accountability is also another really big piece of this. You know, we've already seen since our new Supreme Court, they are being truly accountable and transparent. They have these administrative meetings, for example, where important decisions are talked about and listened. And when the conservatives took over the Supreme Court 15 years ago, they closed that down to the public. It was no longer transparent in how these decisions were being made. And now they're opening it again. And so they're already making steps to make government more accountable and more transparent. And I think that's a core value to what Wisconsinites want in their elected officials.
And isn't that really what we were saying last week, is that this isn't, you know, as the conservatives wanted to make it sound like some wild departure, when really it's reverting to the mean. It's coming back to, you know, the depoliticizing of what's been going on for 15 years.
Well, that's what I thought was so funny. I mean, here is the Chief Justice litigating what is just operational procedures to the public, which is completely inappropriate, but it is on things that are opening up government in the way that it should have always been opened for the beginning. And so these are, again, values worth fighting for. And that's what Wisconsinites want. They want folks that are going to go to the mat and make sure government is doing and best serving them.
You know, that is a point that I think that Aaron and Nicole and others will need to be mindful of, because it's going to be too easy to both sides of this thing and say, oh, we elected Janet Protasiewicz and now they're fighting. You know, it's like, no, they're not there fighting. It's coming back to this transparency and accountability. And again, Aaron, it's the nature of service. And Kristen Lyerly noted in the last hour, again, it's not just justices. It's the people that you're going to elect to school board. Might not agree 100% with them, but are you going to agree with them a lot? And are they going to serve with integrity? That's really the thing that, you know, you and your neighbors, I think, are going to be looking for.
Absolutely. And there's so much about framing, right? Like, that's a lot of what I'm hearing from this conversation right now, is there's a lot about framing. And so much of what we try to do with Motherhood for Good is reframe or sort of distill the frame about any given issue to make it easier for people who maybe don't consider themselves to be like incredibly politically involved to really understand what's actually going on, to sort of understand beyond really polarized like headlines or like their, you know, friends or relatives, like hot takes or whatever. It's like, look at what's actually happening. So this discussion about what's going on with this sort of transparency suddenly being reopened, it's like that's going to get skewed by some voices as this like activist bench or whatever, when in reality, like we're sort of distilling now, it's actually coming back to what I think everybody would agree should be happening with our government, is that it's functioning for the people. We have to be able to see what's going on if it's going to function for us. So I think like reframing some of these discussions so that people can actually hone in on what's really happening, not just what's the sort of frantic discussion that everybody's sort of digging their heels into, like what's really happening, get informed, learn about what's going on. And that's empowering. And with that empowerment of information is going to, I think it just sort of necessarily turns into engagement.
That's Aaron Phillips, and we're also talking with Nicole Slavin and Wisconsin Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski. And Nicole, there was historic turnout in April, and certainly good reason for that, you know, coming off of the Dobbs decision and a very public race. But I wonder, moving forward, again, keeping people engaged and wanting to see that high voter turnout in the future, I don't know that can always be done with frustration with a state's or with a U.S. Supreme Court decision. You've got to have those positive aspects that keep people involved. So how are you doing that? What are the things that you and your community, and you want others in their Wisconsin communities to be talking about in terms of the value of staying engaged, not just because of one single thing that made you mad, but for the public good?
No, that's a really great point. And I think a lot of what we're doing is meeting people where they are, right? So it doesn't always have to be the whirlwind of the election cycle and knocking on doors and doing all of that. It's just staying connected to your community. So we do a lot of outreach as far as just getting parents together, moms together, maybe it's a cup of coffee, you know, and then you also talk a little about what's happening in the political cycle. Maybe you don't. Maybe you just get to know each other's kids and have a second to, you know, breathe and step away for a minute and connect with people. But I think knowing your communities, reaching out, getting better connected, it doesn't have to be about whatever the big scary thing is that happened. We have enough of that. We don't need any more big scary things. I think too, this is kind of a new day for us with the Supreme Court. Like, you look over your shoulder to Michigan and Minnesota and you see, hey, they took advantage of this time when, you know, things landed in place and you could really make good positive change. I really, really am hopeful and looking forward to lots of good positive change happening here in Wisconsin as well.
Sarah, as you move into this role as Secretary of State, to what degree are you doing like public speaking or visiting privately with groups and such? And are you carrying some kind of a similar message in terms of, you know, staying involved and talking about more than just the duties and service of the office, but just being good Wisconsin citizens?
Yeah, I mean, if there's something that I think all of us have learned is you have to meet people and travel to their communities. You can't expect them to come up and visit you in Madison. And so for me, that's what I've been spending some of my time this summer. I actually was up in Rusk County in Ladysmith and met with all the county leaderships and the clerks and talked about ways that they need support and we can be working together. I did actually a town hall in Bayfield County and the town of Washburn, where we were talking about everything from my role as the chair of the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands to the work that we can be doing with modernization to just last week I was in the Cooley region. Meeting with their clerks and with their community leaders. And so this is, I think, what's really important is you got to show up, you got to listen, and then be able to talk about how the things that are keeping them up at night and the work that you're doing every day to make the state better.
And we didn't even get into the Board of Commissions of Public Lands. We could do a segment there on the things that you're doing, but I've only got a couple of seconds left, so I have to ask the more important question. Has your husband yet forgiven you for springing this on him, the Secretary of State's job?
Well, I mean, since this is the Motherhood for Good segment, I think another question is, has my son forgiven me? Because this morning, as I was running up to get ready for this call, he's like, where are you going? Mom, are you leaving me again? Because I was just in Kenosha yesterday.
Just a quick interview. Just a quick interview. You got this.
Mom, Mom.
Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski and working mom. Thank you so much. So good to talk to you again.
Thanks.
Come back again real soon. Aaron and Nicole, great as always. Thanks for another wonderful Motherhood Monday. When we come back, Terry Bell, Civic Media News Director, with three things to know to start the week. We'll be back. You're up north. All right, Terry Bell, Civic Media News Director, joins us now from the brand spanking new studios at the top of State Street, just off Capitol Square there. Terry, how are you? How was the weekend?
The weekend was great. Saw a heck of a Brewer game Saturday night. That was an exciting finish. Yeah, what more could you want?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that was great. That was the first time in, 47 games when they trailed at the end of eight innings, they finally won one?
And I was there for it, so that was good.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Good work out of you.
Hey.
Terry brings us three things to know to start the week, and we're going to pick up pretty much right where we left off, and that is, you know, the change that has come to the state Supreme Court, and a Chief Justice who didn't seem to have any qualms about removing powers and responsibilities from a governor and an attorney general a few years back, seems a little surprised to find out that it can happen to her office as well.
Well, the tables have turned, and the new liberal majority is asserting its power now, and it's not going over well in certain circles. So the new court getting off to quite a contentious start. Yeah, on Friday, the liberal majority held a meeting, voted to reduce the powers of the Chief Justice. So now many of those powers are now in the hands of an administrative committee, which includes the Chief Justice and two other justices that are appointed by majority justices. So that is new. Also, administrative meetings. These are not deliberations on cases, but administrative meetings, things like budgets, court policies, and other issues. These are being made public again. They used to be. They went private for several years. Now these are being made public again. Also, the court is forming a committee to study when justices should recuse themselves from cases. There's been some feeling that judges should be required to recuse themselves in certain cases. That is not the case right now. That is the choice of each justice in each case. But now there may be some stricter policies to follow. Now, Annette Ziegler, the Chief Justice, she says the majority is overstepping its bounds, but Rebecca Dallet of the new majority says the justices tried several times since spring to schedule a meeting for August, and she says the Chief Justice refused. So it's kind of a she said situation there. And I guess the takeaway is that it's going to be a rocky couple of years on Wisconsin Supreme Court, to say the least.
Well, again, it doesn't have to be, but the things that you outlined, the changes are in many ways changes back. It was the conservative majority that loosened up the recusal rules despite immense public pressure from dozens of retired judges, for example, who called on the Supreme Court to have stronger recusal rules, and they opted not to. They, having come off elections that were extremely expensive, extremely well-funded, and it raised a lot of concerns that there should be stronger recusal rules, and instead those rules were weakened, and as you said, the administrative processes were made less transparent. And so to the extent that, in my mind, the Chief Justice and also Justice Rebecca Bradley, if they want to make this appear to be a public spat, that's their right. But then it also, you know, the record needs to reflect the changes that they made while they were in the majority for all of those years. Our second thing to know about the week is, again, Wisconsin's status as an island, and not in a good way. We don't have the palm trees and, you know, the sunshine year round. This is an island of legal restrictions, or shall we say legal opportunities, in all of the other states, thanks to a change in Minnesota.
Right. So recreational marijuana is now legal for adults 21 and older in Minnesota. And this makes Wisconsin, as you say, an island. We are surrounded. Each of our border is touched by a state where marijuana is legal in one form or another. Recreational and medicinal in Michigan, medicinal in Iowa, recreational in Illinois, and recreational in Minnesota now. And why this is important to Wisconsin is because people who can now buy marijuana legally are leaving Wisconsin, at least for a day trip, to get their marijuana. And with it, the potential for a lot of taxable income for the state, which could be, you know, very helpful for the state's budget issues. And Melissa Agard, she's been the most prominent voice for legalization for many years. And again, she's pointing out this problem. In Minnesota, their Department of Revenue ran the numbers and figure they'll break in $110 million in tax revenue between now and 2027.
Wow. Well, it's something where, again, we have a legislature that is, you know, gerrymandered in a way that it does not have to necessarily face any consequences for not going along with the, you know, the will of the people in terms of how they vote or their values, whether it's abortion rights or legal marijuana or gun safety. But it's certainly something that legislators can continue to hear about if people choose to reach out to them. Third thing to know, Barbie's rich. Barbie's loaded.
Holy cow. This is important. I included this one because there has been so much talk since the pandemic about the future of motion pictures. And there have been a handful of them that come along in that time, declaring itself, setting itself up to be, or the media has declared them to be the movie that will save movies. And none of that really panned out until Barbie. So it reached $1 billion in gross sales this weekend, and it's on a very fast pace. There are only, gosh, I'm looking at 53 films in all time have made $1 billion. Barbie is one of them, and looks to just keep going. It's getting a lot of repeat business. People don't just see this movie once. They see it several times. And, you know, there is the, I think Warner Brothers kind of got this whole Barbieheimer thing meme yes. going. You can kind of forget Oppenheimer, although that's a very strong but flawed film in its own right. But Barbie's doing this on her own. She doesn't need Oppenheimer.
Oh yeah, she'd have done. Yeah, she definitely would have done it without Oppenheimer on there. So Aaron and I both saw it over the weekend. So tell me what you mean by a flawed film.
Well, a lot of what most of the criticism is that the movie pretty much yada yadas Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't depict or convey in any way the human toll of the first two bombs that were dropped. I've read several articles that criticize the movie for that. I would guess if the filmmakers, I don't know what anyone has said about this, but if you ask filmmakers, I'm guessing they're telling Robert Oppenheimer's story. So to keep yes. it in his realm would be a perfectly valid choice, but also, you know, it maybe gave short shrift to, you know, the human cost of the atomic bomb.
I hear you. Okay. Terry Bell, Civic Media News Director. Thank you so much, sir. Have
thank
a great
you,
start to the week.
You bet.
All right. And thank you, everybody, for being a part of our Monday morning here. You can email us anytime, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. You can stay up to date on our unabashedly Wisconsin news with our daily newsletter. Sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. We'll have Hans Breitenmoser and The Uplift with Christina Laurie tomorrow. Have a wonderful Monday. See you tomorrow. We'll be right back.